Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Happy Being Well. I have an exciting guest today, Rebecca L. Norrington. And she is the happiness specialist and inner peace practitioner. I mean, we couldn't have the most perfect guest for the Happy Being Well podcast show. Now another cool thing is me and Rebecca are co-authors in an upcoming book that's going to be hitting bookshelves February 15th this year. And that book is called Wellness for Winners. And you can find it on Amazon. And so, but before we dive deep with Rebecca, and
Well, I just want to say, I'm not in that book. I'm in the book I read. I'm not in the book that you just said.
Oh, okay.
just for clarification.
Okay, so another book. Yeah, the book I read. We're co-authors in the book I read. So I apologize for that. And so a message for a sponsor, which is happybeingwell.com, your online store for activewear leggings, 100% facial 100% natural facial masks, bath soaps, essential oils, aromatherapy diffusers, natural deodorants, and much more self-care goodies at happybeingwell.com. Use code podcast25 for 25% off all activewear leggings. So Rebecca, I'm so excited to have you on this podcast. You're literally like, I've never ran into your happiness specialist before. I mean, I've read, there's that one famous book, The Happiness Project. I've read The Happiness Project, which I thought was really interesting. Like no one's really dived deep into the science of it. I mean, there's been articles written about it. But I've never came across somebody that's literally specializes in happiness. So this is really cool and really a great treat for our viewers or listeners. So how did you become a happiness specialist?
Ooh, wait, I don't remember. No, I'm just kidding. Well, and I want to say thank you so much for inviting me on your show. I really appreciate that. Very, very humbly grateful for you to extend the invitation. Absolutely. Oof, you know, this happiness thing, when I was younger, do you remember, does anybody out there have a birthday? Who has a birthday out there? Do you remember blowing out your candles on the birthday cake, or maybe even throwing a coin in a fountain and making a wish, blowing out your candles, making a wish? Well, I always wished for the same things. When I got into my mid-teens, I started wishing for the same thing over and over and over again. I said, I wished for two things. I wanted to live to my potential. I had no idea what that meant. I had no idea what that looked like. And I really wasn't concerned, but I said, I want to live to my potential. And the second thing I always wished for is I wanted to be happy. And this happiness thing, you know, it was very elusive. I thought, like most programmed humans, that I'm going to be happy after I find Mr. Right. I'm going to be happy after I have a certain amount of money in my bank account. I'm going to be happy after I have this title, that title, this title, this job. I'm going to be happy when I live on the top of the hill. I'm going to be happy when I travel. None of that, which is so horrible, none of that affects or adds to your happiness. And in fact, there was a very famous, he's a billionaire now. His name is, I think, I always get his last name wrong. Ted Leonsis, L-E-O-N-S-I-S. He was in a plane accident in 1993, and he survived it, a plane crash in 1993 and survived it. And from that, you may remember this, he came up with this, I'm changing my life. He started the bucket list. Do you remember that? The bucket list, and his bucket list, this is a billionaire now. He has 101 things on the bucket list. Well, there is absolutely nothing on that list that adds to happiness. And when I say happiness, let me give you my definition. My definition is the ability to be at peace, the ability to vibrate peace, regardless of what happens to you and regardless of what doesn't happen. What happens, what doesn't happen. That is my definition. The ability to be at peace, regardless of what happens and regardless of what doesn't happen. But the good news is, can you imagine that? Being at peace regardless of what life throws at you. And in fact, let me just be real transparent. I got an IRS audit. This morning I got something in the mail that said my AT&T account was suspended. And you know, when I got the IRS audit, I cannot wait. Never experienced an IRS audit before. Let's go. But that's only 2022. Happiness is a practiced skill. And so all I do is teach what to practice. Let me just get this really quick. And what I do is I just teach what to practice. And when I say it, happiness is a practice skill, the more you practice, and it is a daily practice, daily, moment by moment practice, the more you will feel the shift. And all it is, the practice is eliminating the behaviors that have been proven to subtract from happiness, and then adding and cultivating the behaviors that add to happiness. This is a long list. I don't know if this is on video. This is a long list of all the behaviors that subtract, behaviors that add. So it's a process. It takes patience. And when you prioritize happiness, and I say happiness, but I'm going to use these other words too that are the same. Happiness, peace, contentment, a vibration of satisfaction. That's what I'm talking about. Where to stay there, where to identify with that vibration, and how to do that.
Yes, definitely. I mean, everybody can learn how to do that. And so how does one do that though? So say somebody may, I don't know, let's say somebody loses their house, you know, how do they stay in that at peace when maybe their mind might be thinking about either they're going to be keep thinking about, you know, how they lived in that house and memories of the house or their day to day. Now they're contrasting it with maybe they're in an apartment. Maybe they have thoughts of worries for the future or whatever it is, you know, people's minds ruminate. So how would that person tap into peace?
First of all, great question. First of all, one of the things that you just demonstrated, which is the stories, you know, the stories about the house, stories about the stories. Well, the stories are all suspect because the stories are created by what? The mind. Are the stories true? So I'm already done with the stories, but let me answer your question. The first thing a person does is they have to make the commitment. And believe it or not, when I ask people, do you want to be happier? Everybody raises their hand. Yeah, sure, of course, until I drop the bomb on them. And the bomb is prioritize, commit. And guess what? This is the worst. You have to. Oh, let me just do this. When I teach the class, The Truth About Happiness, let me just back up. When I teach the class, I give everyone a gift, and it is an actual package. There's something in this package. And I say, in this package is going to be the answer to all of your problems, all of your life challenges for the rest of your life. This is the answer. So Rita, can you guess what's in the package?
Oh boy. Facing truth, having faith.
It's an object.
Oh, it's an object.
It's an object. And everyone has one in their house. And everyone has one in the car.
And this object is related to having lifelong happiness. correct?
Let me take you out of your misery. The object is a mirror. I give everyone a mirror. So people want to be happy, of course, but who wants to look in the mirror? Who wants to look in the mirror for solutions? Now, the program is to point out to my what's going on in my life, out to the experience, out to the circumstance, out to another person. Nobody wants to look in the mirror. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's a very lonely. No, it's not lonely, but it is a commitment. And when you make the commitment, and I made the commitment, I wanted two things: potential happiness. That's it.
Absolutely. So now there's people out there too, like I hear, you know, people saying that, being positive and always focusing on happiness is, now they think that's toxic. Like, I'm hearing that now, which I think is, to me, crazy, because it's like, you know, we know what, if you focus on the good things, we know that you're going to get good things. I mean, you get what you focus on, you know, that's how you activate, that's how we activate the reticular activating system, you know, once. So what do you say to those people? And how do you know how they even, I think maybe their basis is, you know, they think it's fake or something. They think it's, people are just faking this happiness all the time or positive all the time. So now, like, cause this trend is now emerging as well, which is, it's just so crazy. I think in our study, we like to, like challenges, I think, always challenging the old trends and making new trends. And that's why I kind of feel being a spectator of all of these different trending topics. So anywho, I'd like to hear your take on the people that say about this toxic, whatever, you know, being overly positive is now toxic. I think it's ridiculous.
Well, one of the things that I do not do is I do not judge what anybody else is doing or what they say. Even if they say what you're doing is crazy, I'm going to agree with them. Whatever their opinion is their perspective. Going up against something or someone that believes something different than me is not peaceful. Mm-hmm. It's not. I'm good with not being right. I'm good with I'm good with not even giving you my opinion. I'm good with surrendering to whatever. So I do not look at the news or listen to the news. I do not follow trends. And in fact, the last time, you know, with this whole divide in our country, I had to get out of it, because the thing is, if you want peace, peace lives in the middle. Peace doesn't live on this side. Peace doesn't live on that side. Peace is in the middle. So that's another thing I've had to let go of. Let go of a lot of things I was identifying with, attached to, meaning an idea. No. Mm-hmm. I'm working on a second book. It's called Programmed for Unhappiness. And the things that I've really found is the suffering comes from the programming and the lack inability to come up with another perspective. What you just said, you know, we're talking about the other people that talks. Can you give me another perspective of your conclusion?
My conclusion.
No. Another perspective than what you just told me. Remember, you gave me a whole thing of these people with the toxic, now positive. Can you give me another way of thinking about that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, what you just said right there, programmed for unhappiness. Our society is programmed based on ego. So I believe that, you know, a lot of people are, you know, getting their egos flexed, or, you know, I can challenge that viewpoint. My viewpoint is more superior. Look at their thought gaps or holes. So to me, I just feel like that is just the dominant energy in our North American society, is that we have this kind of like narcissistic dominant energy running through our culture. And a part of that is, you know, ego-based. We're leading from ego, you know, showcasing, well, my thoughts are superior, and trying to constantly, because we're always programmed to look for flaws and trying to up it, right? Up the game or whatever. So that's how I'm viewing it. And that's why, you know, I think most people are programmed for unhappiness, is because you get caught up in this, basically, essentially a game. And, you know, and it's a thought conflict. It's a thought paradigm that we are used to living in within the workplace, within the school system, and it just carries over naturally into how we think, you know, in our social relations. And so, of course, you know, you're always going to be, of course, if you look at that thought paradigm, what's going to come out of it, you're programmed for constantly wanting more, achieving more. And so how could you possibly we're not really programmed to really truly enjoy what we currently have.
How about this? We've all been programmed to blame someone else or the circumstance for how we feel. We've all been programmed to compare ourselves with others. We've been programmed to notice what someone else is doing. That's called being in someone else's business. We're also programmed, this is different. We're all also programmed to think that something is serious and something is important. We're also programmed to think that, this is a good one. I say this to the people that have causes. I'm sorry, people with causes, but you want the people to think that what you think is important is important. People with causes, regardless whether it's animal, whether it's climate, whether it's the environment, whether it's whatever the cause is, recycling. You want someone else to think what you think is important is important. I know I did. I used to think that this happiness thing is everybody. You guys, come on, let's go. Come on with me. Let's go. But guess what? Some people don't think that's important. In fact, they think it's thank you for asking that question. I attended a networking event in September, and it was attended by millionaires, billionaires, blah, 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 blah. And there was one, the owner of Priceline. It was just a huge, big ticket item, big ticket event. And one of the guys I was really interested in, and they all said they'll make themselves available if you want to talk one-on-one. So this one particular man, I can give his name because I wrote an article and I've already published online, unless you don't want me to give the name.
Up to you.
Yeah. Anyway, he I met with him and I told him, and I said, I'm a happiness specialist. And the first thing he said to me, now let me just say, I'm going to say who he is. His name is Walter O'Brien. And I'd never heard of Walter O'Brien before, but Walter O'Brien is a information technologist, a businessman. And according to Google, he's worth $50 million. He stopped terrorists in the United States. He's got an IQ of 187. He has customized Mercedes and Hummers. I wanted to talk to him. I've never met anybody with 187 IQ. I said, hi, I'm a happiness specialist. You know what this guy says to me right off the bat? He said, you know what? I wouldn't hire you in my company. You are toxic. Right to my face. He said, you're toxic. I couldn't stop laughing. He said, you've wasted. He says, how long have you been this happiness specialist? He says, you've wasted 35 years of your life studying happiness. Let me see. He said, I contributed zero to the planet. Searching for happiness Searching for happiness and inner peace is delusional. What I've accomplished can't be measured. Therefore, I've accomplished nothing. I'm only reading because I can't remember all of the insults. And if the clients that I've counseled don't employ at least 1,000 individuals, I'm wasting my time and I have accomplished nothing. Now, this guy is, this was in September. He's what, 3 feet away from me. What the practice is, what does the humpback man want more than anything else? The man with the hump in his back, what does he want more than anything else? He doesn't want his hump. Is that an answer? No, he wants you to be as miserable as he is. So this, one of the things is, the practice is not taking anything anyone says personally, and I don't. And that's why I was able to laugh. Can you imagine a toxic happiness specialist? So anyway, that's part of the practice. I don't even know if I answered your question.
Oh, dear. Well, you know, I'm shocked that he would speak to you like that, given that he's a public figure. Right.
Okay. It's part of my journey. And let me say that what he said to me was so perfect because I was able to see, wow, with your practice, this stuff works. And I'm not talking about a year of practice. I'm talking about decades of practice, of making a commitment. Oh, the other thing that he does, he's responsible for that CBS series Scorpion. I think a story was, the CBS series was based on his life story, Scorpion. But yeah. And I said, well, and I took a picture with him. I said, thank you very much. I mean, it was so revealing to me that what anyone thinks of me or how much you can insult me, you can't insult me and you can't compliment me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that shows my point of, you know, society. But I'm just shocked that he would say it straight out like that to,
I love it though. Come on. Yeah. Be real. I want real. What's behind the, I want real. I want, tell me, you know, the other thing I want to share, which is one of my favorite things to share about happiness. There is a very famous study done by a hospice nurse. Her name is Bronnie Ware. Would we talk about this before? Bronnie Ware, B-R-O-N-N-I-E Ware.
No. And
you can Google her. And so she did a study with all of her patients who are terminally ill. They have days to live. They have weeks to months to live. And she asked them a question and they asked them, what were their 5 top regrets? What were your biggest regrets in your life? What were your 5 biggest regrets in your life? She asked this of people that knew they were dying. And there were 5 regrets that she said kept coming over and over and over. So she condensed it and she actually wrote a book about it, and the 5 most common regrets of the dying. May I share?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course.
The first one is, I wish I would have pursued my dreams and aspirations and not the life others expected of me. And these are not in any particular order, but there are 5 of them, 5 biggest regrets of the dying. Number 2, I wish I didn't work so hard. Number 3, I wish I had the courage to express my feelings and speak my mind. 4, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. Now that's a little, you know, because stayed in touch with my friends, I understand that one. I understand that, but sometimes we outgrow our friends. But that was number 4. And number 5 was, I wish I had let myself be happier. I don't know, that's pretty powerful coming from someone that
it seems to me, you know, and we always hear, you know, people on their deathbeds that, you know, things they regret. So it seems to me that, you know, we truly live for like basically experiences, and experiences that we often wonder what that's like to experience, but we don't do it due to fear and just due to doing something that makes us feel safe, right?
Well, wrong. Let's speak for you, not for everybody. Speak for you. Go.
Okay, I'm speaking from, well, from, I really, I'm, a lot of people do. It's statistically shown and scientifically proven that most people want to feel safe. And this is why that man behaved to you that way, because he feels safe, you know, with his current perspective. You know, maybe happiness to him, maybe that's too scary to explore. Maybe that would mean he would have to sacrifice, you know, being so serious or dedicated to his work role, whatever it is in his mind, right? So all of our human behavior is related to feeling safe. You know, narcissists, people that are have narcissistic personality disorder, they manipulate to feel safe, right? Because most of them have been through traumas. And they learned how to manipulate in order to feel safe when they were going through their childhood trauma through their abuser, right? They had to learn how to manipulate to try to influence their abuser to not be abused in certain ways. And they learned, and that was their dominant role of behavior. So yeah, I can confidently say that everybody does operate from a place of wanting to feel safe. And so, I've blown that out because I've done, you know, lots of work on myself to, I don't do things that, I don't stay from a place of, oh, this makes me feel safe, so I'm going to stay in this particular familiarity, this box. So I've shattered those, you know, boxes, to take on, you know, risks and place all of my energy in faith as opposed to fear and what could go wrong. Like, I don't even give that energy because, well, what could go right? You know, it's like, so yeah, these are programs that we adopt, you know, due to you're walking on a tightrope, and that's pretty scary. If you don't have that net below you, you might fall and hit the cement. And you may not recover. So that's pretty much, you know, how our dominant program thoughts are, you know, like right from we get out of the womb, it's a trauma, right? To get out of the womb is a trauma. We enter the world and it's unfamiliar and we're crying and we're cold. Where are we? And we're helpless, right? And then we just go through a series of other traumas. That, you know, and we all had dramas on different levels to varying degrees. And this is why the human being is always clinging on to what feels safe. So it's up to us to identify, you know, what our traumas are and to release them and to be more mindful of, you know, how our main thought paradigms are constructed so we can shatter them and live from more of a place, like more faith and, you know, and be more happy, right? Because it's truly, you know, an expansion of consciousness to be more happy, to get to that place of, to allow yourself to be happy, because you can deny yourself happiness if you are addicted to perhaps feeling angry because your body is used to releasing those angry emotions. And there's people that are addicted to being happy, and that, you know, happiness is a superpower, because when you're happy, when your more dominant state is happiness, you attract people to you. People want to work with you. You can inspire people more. You can think better. And this is all one of the reasons why I launched Happy Being Well, because I fully know the contrast of living from a place, you know, if you are feeling people that are more attached to being depressed because that's their familiarity place. That's the cycles that they're going through.
They need it. if I say, I want to take you, I remember this one woman was in my class and she was fearful of everything. She was fearful of going outside. She was fearful of the person. And I said, do you watch the news? Yeah, I watch the news. I said, why did you stop watching the news? No. So they need, it becomes, the fear becomes something. How, she wouldn't know what to do with herself living without fear if she wanted to. So the fear becomes part of their identity, and to take the fear away is painful. But I understand what you're saying. The thing with that I found is that the practice is not easy. It's looking in the mirror. The practice is constant. Mm-hmm. It's there. You don't get a break. You don't get a vacation. The practice takes time. You know, when a child is born, we're not telling the kid, hey, hurry up and grow some teeth. Hurry up and start walking. Hurry up and start feeding yourself. Hurry up and start dressing yourself. No, we give the baby the time. And so the patience, that's another thing that subtracts from peace. And I use the word happiness, peace, content. It's the same satisfaction. It's the same vibration. So that's what, so what did I just say?
Peace and happiness is the same vibration.
Same vibration. So I didn't give myself, let me speak for myself. I didn't give myself patience. I had a practice. I'm still practicing patience, which means eliminating all rushing. How many of you out there rush? Practice never rushing again. How many of you out there worry? Anybody worry out there? You know what all worrying is caused from? Lack of trust. That means that you're not looking back on your life and saying, wow, this happened. No, I really wouldn't have wanted that universe. I mean, I wouldn't have scheduled an IRS audit for myself, but the universe knows what's going on. Speaking of that, this is another great one. Listen to this one. This is even better than the IRS audit. So in 2018, my mother died. And about 2 weeks after that, I found out that she gifted the family house to the handyman, to her handyman. I have an attorney and a handyman that was responsible for taking that family house. It took me, with all my practices, what, 18? It took me a few years. It took me, not a few years, 2 weeks to be able to laugh at that. I mean, that's a funny story. Your mom dies and the handyman has the house. It took me 2 weeks to laugh. Mm-hmm. And my mother didn't give that house to the handyman. The attorney didn't do that. The handyman didn't do that. The universe did that. See, for me, that was my gift. Why? Guess what? I still had attachments to things. I still had house, sentimental value. It's supposed to be mine. No. Let go of all attachments and expectations. All expectations subtract from happiness. I mean, I don't expect a text. I don't expect a call. I didn't even expect this interview until I saw you. Zero expectations, but that's a practice. You want to eliminate all disappointment and heartbreak in your life for the rest of your life, eliminate expectations. And then one woman told me last week, but that's hard. That's really hard. Yeah, it is hard. But what's the reward? Peace. That's number one for me. And go back to the deathbed thing. I think the biggest gift I can give myself on my deathbed is the ability to smile. I'm just going to smile. Maybe a joke or two. Maybe a joke or two, too. See y'all later. Yeah.
I love that. I absolutely love that. You know, if you want out of the room, you know, the trick is to not want out of the room, you know.
Now I'm getting chills again. You just gave me chills.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't focus on the exit door. And that's the truth. And it took me a long time to really get, I mean, when you hear things like that, it's like, yeah, that totally makes sense, because you're just going to ruminate and obsess over that wanting to be out of that room. And therefore you're not going to feel good because you're going to contrast, you know, what is outside of the room with what you're currently experiencing in the room. And it's going to make your experience, you know, amplified to like not feeling good. Right. So you just, yeah, that's the true magic of like just living free, you know, living free from these crazy emotions that, you know, that we're so filled with just due to literally our thoughts.
And so let me touch on those thoughts. Let me share with you what my practice is with those thoughts, because I used to have the thoughts just like you, like everybody else. You wake up, something's wrong. You get into these conversations in the mind over and over. Same. So my practice is I witness my thoughts. I step outside. I put my thoughts, I love musical theater. I put my thoughts on a stage and I'm in the audience and I'm sitting there, oh, really? I'm procrastinating again. Oh, I'm not doing as much as I should again. Oh, I'm just wasting time. All of those. Sometimes I'm in the audience like, you got any more? You got any more things to, because I already know the mind has one purpose, is to make me feel bad for as long as possible, for as many times as possible throughout the day. So I already know who's talking. There's two entities. It's got the mind and we have the universe. So, and I say universe, you can say God, higher power, spirit, doesn't matter the term for me. I know it matters to other people, but for me, you can use whatever term. And I put them on a stage and I just watch. And sometimes I'm entertained and sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I engage. Sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it's a community theater, but I already know who's talking.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. You know who's talking. So that's brilliant right then and there. You know who's talking. Mm-hmm. And being the observer of our thoughts. You know, absolutely. That's how it starts. It starts with, you know, first of all, it starts with awareness, listening to a podcast like ours right now to get that awareness, and then start practicing observing your thoughts, doing mindfulness activities with that mirror work, you know, like Rebecca's talking about. Which, you know, I love mirror work. I love affirmations and meditations and journaling. And, you know, you don't have to do the traditional meditation either, sitting in a lotus position. You can do a walking meditation, you know. And actually, when you do affirmations correctly, you have to do it repetitively to the point where you get to a point of hypnosis, self-hypnosis. That's where the affirmations really start to work, when you bypass your conscious mind and it goes into the unconscious mind. So that's where the reprogramming happens, is in the unconscious state. But we have to kind of hijack the conscious mind to kind of get there. So the magic lies in repetition. And if you don't do it repetitively enough, you may stay in the conscious mind. And, you know, when we know what happens when you stay in the conscious mind, you're going to think your way out of it. And you're going to remain in your dominant thought paradigm, whatever that is, in your dominant state anchor. I'm going to use the word state anchor, because some people are anchored to the state of angriness, the state of fear, just due to habits, the habit of feeling that way. And so, for example, somebody could go to a Tony Robbins event and get all amped up and you know, oh yeah, make my move, right? And I'm going to do it in massive action. And then they get home and they're still fired up. Like it's like a fire. And then as the days progress and weeks go by, the fire just slowly goes out because their mind is fighting against the thought, the mind, the body's fighting against the mind because the body is like, I'm not used to feeling this adrenaline and, you know, these, you know, serotonin chemicals being released into the body. So the body is going to start to release those lower toxic chemicals into the mind. So the mind can start going back into the familiarity of, you know, complaining, right? Because that is what the dominant.
Which is an addiction. Complaining is an addiction too.
Addiction.
What I wanted to say that something that I don't do anymore is I'd never use the word because is the beginning of another story. And what the other thing I've had to do, which is really hard for my mind and my ego to do, is giving up that I think I know everything. Giving up that I think, scratch the everything, giving up that I think I know. Oh, I know, but I'm in the phase right now, universe, I don't know. Because the leaving myself open to all possibilities and all perspectives, I like to say that, you know, a circle is 360 degrees. So whatever situation you're in, practice looking at coming up with a perspective, looking at the same situation 360 ways. Mother gifts the house, the family house, to the handyman. Can I look at that more than just one way? Yeah, the universe gave me a gift. Because that it's just a beginning. I've got opportunity for growth. I've got opportunity for expansion. I remember when I was in New York. This is a long time ago, before the Twin Towers were destroyed, blown up. I was on top of one of the towers, and I remember I was right on the roof, and I remember looking down, and I could see the Brooklyn Bridge. And I saw a little plane. I saw a plane beneath me. It flew beneath where I was looking. And you could see all five boroughs. And I remember thinking, wow, that's a hell of a view. Never seen a plane under me before. Going all the way down the elevator to the lobby. My perspective is very limited. I couldn't see a plane. I couldn't see the bridge. So your perspective, my perspective, is another practice. Practice growing your perspective, not to have just one way of looking at a situation. Look at it from all ways. I mean, so many different ways. This is endless. Same situation, but looking at it with different eyes. Let me say it like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah.
No, absolutely. That's truth right there. And, you know, that is something that is absolutely true. And, you know, something that every human being needs to be aware of is that we're limited in our perspective and, you know, because we're only human and we're limited in terms of what we've experienced or what we've read or saw or know. And there's an infinite amount of possibilities out there that, you know, we should allow to open and reveal itself to us and not be so attached to how things should be, you know, in terms of how you think they should be in the future based on the limited amount of what we know. I mean, we are human beings, we're limited in terms of our time. So it, of course, our perspective in terms of what's possible is going to be limited, and we should, you know, like you said, like have faith in the universe or God or source or whatever title you want to label it as. Because they're not limited. It's not limited. They're infinite, right?
Let me give you a really quick example of just switching your perspective. And we all do it, but the practice is really beneficial if you do want to experience more peace. So when I lived in California, road rage, road rage, road rage, people cutting off people, you know, on the freeway, you're getting cut off and you know, a lot of angry drivers. What if somebody cut you off on the freeway and now you're, you know, get a little bothered by it and maybe angry. But what if you found out that they were rushing and they were driving like that because they just got a call and their 5-year-old son is in the hospital? He was hit by a car. So your perspective from being angry at this driver cutting you off would instantly switch if you found out that their son is in ICU. At least my perspective would change. I wouldn't have any anger over somebody that is going through that. So that's what I'm talking about. But it is a practice every day. So start practicing. If this is important to you, start practicing finding another perspective. If I'm looking at the same thing, the same way, and it's all the time, I already know that I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. So it's more possibilities. Life is an experience mm-hmm. without judgment. Mm-hmm. It's all it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And Don Miguel Luis, you know, he says in the Four Agreements, like, don't take what other people do or say to you personal. It's not personal. That is their dream. That is their reality that they are imposing upon you. It has nothing to do with you.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I have questions for your audience. So I'm asking you, can other people hurt your feelings? And these are yes or no answers. You can't say maybe. It's yes or no. Because one of the things that I've discovered is you really have to pinpoint, you know, in other words, can other people hurt your feelings? Yes or no. Can other people offend you? Yes or no. Do you blame other people for how you feel? Yes or no. And do you blame your circumstances? So if you answer to yes to any of those, hey, let's work together.
Absolutely. That's awesome, Rebecca. And where can people go to find you and learn more about you and ways to work with you?
Thank you. Well, my email address is rln@RebeccaNorrington.com, rln@RebeccaNorrington.com. My website, which needs to be revamped, but anyway, it's RebeccaNorrington.com. And I also host a live podcast. I've been doing it for almost 12 years now.
Oh, wow.
On Sunday at, in fact, you can come on the show. I would love to have you as a guest.
Yay.
On Sunday. Yes. On Sunday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. It's called Reality Spirituality, The Truth About Happiness. It's on Blog Talk Radio. It's online. I'm on, you could find me on Instagram, LinkedIn, and then there's a new app coming out that's going to be, and not Clubhouse, but there's a new app coming out. They haven't even launched it yet, but it's called Owl, OWWLL. And it, don't you know about it?
Yeah.
And it's going to be coming out soon, right?
I thought it was already out, but I guess not. I don't know.
They're still testing.
Okay. Yeah. I know there's wisdom, there's fireside chat.
Yes, wisdom.
I'm on wisdom, but I'm not on the other ones. Like there's breakout, I seem like breakout app. There's the breakout app and fireside chat and yeah, Owl and some of these audio. But as far as I know, Clubhouse is still number one in terms of the audio social media apps. It's still, Clubhouse is still has the most amount of users. And Wisdom, you know, I think Wisdom's kind of fizzling.
Really?
Yeah, because I've done two recorded talks in Wisdom, and I did one maybe like last year. And I remember when I went on it, it was like a lot of activity in terms of the live chats, the live talks. And then the last time I went on there, I did another, I haven't really been active on it. Like, I've only been on there sporadically. I'm more active on Clubhouse because you have that more engagement, because with Wisdom, it's more solo. Yeah. And so I just didn't see a lot of activity last time I was on there. I didn't see live talks, the live rooms, or whatever you want to call them, live chats as much. But it's another great audio app. So it seems like, you know, it's like we've got the other form of podcasting where it's open to an audience that we can engage with these apps. Whereas the podcast, it's just me and Rebecca, and or maybe just me. We're
podcast, the one I do, you can call in and talk to me live. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
And sometimes, like you said though, Rita, sometimes it's just me, and sometimes people call in, and I'm okay with whatever happens. I remember when I first started over 10 years ago, and there was a listener, two listeners. And of course I couldn't even speak for longer than 2 minutes, 3 minutes, you know, a Toastmaster, 2 minutes. And now I can go for an hour just talking because I'm very passionate about this. But when I was talking to the universe years ago, and I said, nobody's listening, universe. Nobody's listening. Four people. And that's when I learned the lesson about numbers. And they said, we're listening. Isn't that enough? So that's another practice. Do not pay attention to numbers. On the scale, in the bank account, who's listening, who shows up, one person show up, 30 people, 300, 3 million. Doesn't matter. The universe does not know numbers. The universe is not time. None of that. So it's really, my practice is being more like the universe. Human body, human, but like the universe. So the struggle is not what we are told it is. It's not Corona. It's COVID. The struggle is always internal. Suffering comes from thinking that something needs to be different than what is actually happening. Wanting something different than what is actually happening in the minute, in the moment, is where the suffering starts. And the programming of, that's another word I never use. I never use the word should. You'll never hear me say it. There's nothing I should do. It's only what I'm inspired to do. I had to let go of that should word a long time ago. And the stories that you tell yourself determines your beliefs. And then your beliefs determine how you feel. And then how you feel determines your vibration. And then your vibration determines your contribution to this planet. Mm-hmm. So what is your contribution? Is it peace or is it drama? And that's how you serve the world without even leaving your house.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I like why you phrase that. What's your contribution? Is it peace or is it drama? And my belief is that, you know, I'm sure you heard like there's a massive trend. Everyone's talking about narcissistic personality disorder. It's a huge topic, you know, on Clubhouse, YouTube, Quora forums, Facebook groups. And I believe that, you know, people that choose, you know, I believe it's a choice, because now the awareness, if you don't realize you're taking on these, you know, these narcissistic traits, that you are, it's a catalyst, you know, it's a catalyst to teach people, you know, the importance of empathy and compassion. And because I can speak from experience. I was with one and they put on a good show. But behind the scenes, they are actually miserable. Like they're miserable. They can't produce their own energy of that go energy, right? They have to constantly leech onto something or someone to kind of get energy, whether that's motivation energy, inspiration, right through jealousy, right? That gets them amped up, right? They have to constantly compare themselves to others or be in this competitive mode or whatever it is. So therefore they're very, like, they torture people psychologically.
You know what's interesting about this whole narcissist? It's so, I don't know why the universe is dropping this in my lap. The last week I've talked to, now you're the fifth woman that has been with a narcissist. Did you say that you were with a narcissist? Okay, fifth woman. And they all these women have something in common. Well, not you, because I haven't talked to you that, no, this is our first real conversation. Not you, take you out. For all the four women, it's not you, had something in common. They all talked about the narcissist. Every time I talked to them, the narcissist came up. The topic of the narcissist kept coming up. Mm-hmm. That's another example of narcissist or look in the mirror. If I'm talking about the narcissist, I don't have to look in the mirror. Mm-hmm. And you said something else about we have a choice. Well, you don't have a choice if you're programmed and you don't recognize the programming. Robots don't have choices. Yeah. So if you're programmed, sometimes you don't have a choice. My mother didn't have a choice. She was programmed. My father was programmed. Most people, a lot of people, are programmed. Ask them to do something different than what they've been doing for the last 100 years. Can they?
It's difficult. It's really difficult.
Very difficult. Yeah.
Because it's just that wheel has been spinning a certain way for so long and it's used to spinning that way. And it just spins and it spins and it spins without even thinking. And then you tell that wheel, okay, you know, maybe we should shift gears because it's causing problems with the other ligaments. And they're like, no, it's not. I can still spin the wheel. It's still spinning. It still works. I don't know what you're talking about. And so, or, you know, they just, maybe they may recognize it may be a little bit problematic, but they still, maybe they try to consciously adjust, but then they revert back to the spinning of the same wheel because that's familiarity. That's how they spun their wheel. And, you know, so they'll just, it's difficult. It just depends on, you know, I would say how motivated you are to change. And also too, the Les Brown example with the dog and the nail, you know, I love that metaphor where, you know, the dog sitting on the porch with the lady's rocking the chair, the dog is making the moans because he's sitting on a nail. And, you know, people ask, you know, why isn't the dog move? And the old lady says, because it doesn't hurt him that much. So he just sits there in the same position with the nail. So it's just like human behavior. It's the same thing. If there's a lot of, for most humans, if there's a lot of pain caused by the behavior, then that's when, you know, they're going to start to shift to change is when, because it's so painful that their behavior is causing, then that, you know, usually is when they'll start to be like, okay, like I can't take this pain anymore. What do I need to do to stop it? Right. So that's typically the driver of human behavior, typically.
it's very difficult. It's a very small percentage that has the ability to change. Very small percentage.
Yeah, I agree. It requires, you know, to reprogram yourself. And when you look at how many years did it take for you to be programmed? Well, you really look at it, all the years, right from, you know, you're a baby, we learn you know, walking, talking, and you go into school at age four. And then that's really when the programming is, you know, starts all those years of, you know, programming until, so how do you, you have to kind of like be aware of it, undo it, and then reprogram it. And it's, that just takes you, you know, it can take you, it's a journey. It's a journey.
It's taking a lifetime. I mean, I still have programs that I'm finding at 66.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. It even take, it's a journey to even identify them, you know?
Yes. And I can feel it. So I have a question. Are words powerful?
Yes and no.
That's actually I hate that yes or no answer, but with that particular question, you're right. It is a yes and a no. They're not innately powerful, but we were programmed to believe that they're powerful.
Oh dear, that is a philosophy topic, my dear.
Can I jump in real fast? Can you see this? I don't know. Can you see this?
Yeah.
It's me holding a baby.
Yeah, I see that.
Okay, yeah, she's almost two or so. It's me holding a baby. So I was giving a talk about, you know, happiness, what else? What else? And this woman, maybe it was at a chiropractor office, and it was very small, maybe about 15, 20 people. And this woman brought her little girl. And she put their little girl down. The little girl's running up and down the aisle. And now I'm thinking, what the hell? Why is this little girl here? But I just got to the place where I started talking about words having power. Thank you, universe, for that little girl, allowing me to use that little girl as a prop. I picked the little girl up and I started insulting her. I said, you know, you're ugly and you're not going to amount to anything in this world. You're stupid. You're a loser. And your parents are losers too. Now the mother's sitting there like this. And most of the people, you know, all the other 15 people are, what the hell is she doing? I mean, I couldn't insult that little girl more. I put her down, and guess what she started? And guess what she did? She went back to playing. She could care less what I said to her. So no, at that stage, no, words are not. We learned that words are powerful, and that's the reason why that Walter O'Brien can stand there and say all those things to me, because words are not powerful to me. That's my practice. That's why I said you can't insult me and you can't compliment me. But energy is powerful. Vibrations are, I mean, I can feel that, but words, not to me. That's my practice.
Mm. Well, that is I would say philosophical. I don't agree. I mean, the Dr. Emoto experiment, explain that. That was purely based on words.
Is that the one with the snowflakes?
Yeah, the water. They talk to the water.
I got that. I understand that. And I'm just talking, but who is more powerful? The person that is not insulted by words, not offended by words, or someone that, I'm talking about a person. I'm not talking about a snowflake that allows words to bring you here or bring you there. See, you can't offend me with any word.
So I see what you're
saying. Can you imagine if this world was not offended? Because being offended is a program. It's a huge program. I'm offended.
Right. I get it. I see. I hear what you're saying. So this is what it is. So with you, you're a human being with your own mind. You've programmed yourself to cancel out that force field energy coming at you, because the word, the negative words do have an energy coming at you. There is energy, there's a vibration. All of our words do have vibration energy behind them. And because you're a conscious human being, you're now consciously aware of that, but you're putting up a force field to block it out so it doesn't, you know, affect your energy field.
Well, there's no blocking. I'm not blocking. No blocking. What it is it's it just doesn't. I'm not doing this.
No, I know you're not physically. I mean, consciously, you're doing it, like energy.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I'm not meaning like physical. It's a metaphor. This is a metaphor. You're doing that energetically, right?
Yes.
So yeah, that's what I meant. And whereas with most human beings that are not doing that, they're just reacting and responding by the reaction of, you know, having these insults hurled at them. And those insults do carry an energy vibration, you know, just like our music has a certain vibration, there's a certain hurts to them, a certain. And so, you know, if you're playing heavy metal, like science has shown that it does affect, you know, the water objects, again, just like Dr. Moto experienced, the same thing. And so the same thing with the human being, we're mainly composed of water, you know, we are a living organism as well. And so, but we do have a thinking mind. So if we can program ourselves with truth, knowing that the truth behind the energy field is not really about us, it's about the person, we can, you know, not accept that energy vibration towards us by just knowing that it's not true, and live in your own truth, that which requires faith, like faith in yourself. Like it does require, you know, you have to be stronger. You got to flex those muscles of knowing who you are, knowing truth, knowing your inner truth, right? That requires blowing out all of your limiting and false beliefs. That requires, you know, really truly having faith in yourself in order to do that.
Let me just offer this also, because I'm not pretending to do any of this stuff by myself. Every day I have conversations with the universe all day long. I go out and then when I ask for something, universe, and all I do is ask, universe, how do I expand my consciousness? How do I let go? And I found something else that I just about a week ago. I want to be my mind. I want to be relevant. That's another program. I want to be relevant. So what does that mean, Rebecca? Relevant. All of that. And then I'm to a point where I say now, universe, I just want what you want for me. I don't have a want. I don't have a desire. I don't have any of that. I've let it all go. Whatever. Whatever you want for me is what I want. It's a total surrender. It's not what I want, because obviously they're not listening to me. No, seriously, it's a total surrender. So with that, I want to share the things that I've written down. There's probably more that add to happiness. We talked about what subtracts. Let's talk about practicing what adds. So what adds to happiness is making happiness your number one priority, committing to the search, surrendering to whatever is happening in the moment, humbling your ego, knowing yourself, acceptance of self, and you can only accept others when you accept yourself, living consciously, being okay with uncertainty. That's a hard one. Being okay with uncertainty, that means, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but I'm okay with that, universe. I don't know what the universe's will is, but I'm okay with it, universe. Allowing others to be themselves without judgment. That's a hard one for me, but I'm practicing, still practicing. Trust, letting go of the illusion of control, thinking that I have control, thinking that I'm making something happen. Really? Choosing my perspective, choosing my focus, having patience, self-awareness, witnessing moments instead of personalizing moments, staying out of everybody's business, staying out of their business, a deep appreciation of life, and a daily pattern eliminating behaviors that subtract from happiness and practicing behaviors that add to happiness.
Absolutely. Wow. This was a very empowering, very thought-provoking, very insightful conversation. It's probably one of my best conversations I've had on Happy Being Well. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was going to be. I was so excited to have you. I was like, that you're on and you came on. You're the happiness specialist. I knew you're going to have really awesome things to say, and you did. You sparked, thoughts that, you know, we all should be exploring, and thoughts that, you know, we techniques and strategies that we all should be exercising.
You said should twice already. Keep going.
Right, I did.
You see on my ear, and see, my ears are too good. I have to, my ears are too good. But yeah, I understand. Yeah. And so if I say to you, the word should, eliminate it. Can you?
It's such a programmed word that we use in everyday language with writing and speaking, and then we hear it everywhere. So it's going to be an unconscious language in bed, just because it's like literally everywhere in our society. I hear you, definitely.
Well, if you know it's everywhere, then it's suspect. If 98% of the population is saying that, then I'm going to go this way. I'm not going to go where 98% people go. I'm going over here. Mm-hmm. That's the place of the unprogramming.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. So we would rephrase it as, if you want to be happy, then practice these techniques.
If you're committed, if you think that's important, if you find any value in it, if you find any value in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. You have to.
And some people find or they accomplish all of this. I mean, come on. The people that the Robin Williams, the Michael Jackson, the Prince, the Kate Spade, the Adrian Bourdain. These people had everything. I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah.
But where's the peace? Mm-hmm. No. Anyway, that's my champion. That's why I'm here. It's my purpose is to share. And I'm not saying I have all the answers, but to share with what I've discovered, what I've learned, what I have. I tell my son, I got the answer. I got some answers to the test. I'll give you the answers. You want some answers?
Anyway. Yeah. No, I hear you. And it is, this is why I do what I do to try to increase everyone's consciousness. And get everybody to drink water every day with lemon and their celery juice and get some physical activity and just being more mindful, just increasing your mindfulness every day, you know, helps you to choose to live in peace. When you realize all the little things that you're worrying about are really just silly, because they're just mental constructs of a what if, you know, it's Bob Marley said, worrying are prayers to the devil. That's what he said. Yeah. Mm. Right. I love Bob Marley. Oh, I love his music. It's like his music is so true. It literally rings true. Okay. Bob Marley music should be like literally playing around the whole world.
You know, my best friend loves Bob Marley. He loves Bob Marley. Yeah. Does. the one I was talking to you about earlier.
Yeah, in fact, I may just play some Bob Marley after this podcast, just as my little, you know, recharge and reset. I have my favorite little music, you know, to kind of recharge me up, you know, for my little recharge for the day to get me onto the next task or project. My other favorite song is Eye of the Tiger. That always pumps me up. And Bee Gees, Staying Alive. Those are my two like power songs.
Oh, you didn't see that face, did you?
Yeah. The Bee Gees, Staying Alive.
I know. Well, let's see. I like the theme from Gladiator. Come on, let's go.
Gladiator.
Yeah, it's a powerful instrumental. Or the theme from, what was it called? Chasing. It was da na 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 da 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 da.
Oh yeah.
Da 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 dee dee. La 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 la. That one.
Yeah, but it's so traumatic though. It's like more. It's like very opera. It's like there's no like.
Okay.
Where's that beat, you know, or Eye of the Tiger, you know, it's such a, and especially with Staying Alive, it's really like, you get you.
Yeah, I got you. Let me just end with this. Happiness is a state of mind. Happiness is a state in mind. Happiness is a vibration. It's an energy. It's a foundation. And then when you practice, it becomes your identity.
Awesome. Love that. Awesome. 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 So everybody, I highly, highly encourage you to check out Rebecca Norrington's website, to get in touch with her, follow her on Instagram and Twitter, and they can find that all on your website, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and do you have any workshops or any downloads?
Not yet, but I'm working on my second book, Program for Unhappiness.
Perfect. And do you have an email newsletter?
No, I do not. I used to, but no, I do not.
Okay. Well, if you do want to stay in touch with her content, then follow her on Instagram and, you know, be a subscriber to her Blog Talk Radio so you can stay up to date and with her content and get to know her better and, you know, and buy her book because she knows her stuff, guys.
Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Let me just say that my first book is called Reality Spirituality, The Truth About Happiness. That's on Amazon, but that was published in 2014. But yeah, that you can find that on Amazon. Reality Spirituality, The Truth About Happiness.
Okay. Reality
Spirituality. It's one word.
Okay.
The Truth About Happiness. I'm having it trademarked.
Okay. And the link to that will be on this podcast episode for the audio listeners. You can just click on it or copy and paste it to go purchase her book on Amazon. So you're so welcome. Thank you so much for sharing your light and knowledge and, you know, and experiences with our podcast listeners. Thank you. It's been a real treat. Loved every second of conversing with you.
Thank you so much, Rita. Again, I really am honored. Thank you so much for allowing me to be on the show and sharing. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show. All right, guys, sending lots of light and love to everybody. Until next time, guys.